Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, I'm back. Welcome back to the Chilling with Cheese show. We're back. We've been gone for a long time. We're going to get this party started real quick. Got some great guests coming in tonight. I'm going to try to get the champ, Hasim Rahman, calling in. We also have Karen Mulvaney from HBO Sports. And we'll have Norm Frauenheim from 15rounds.com. So it should be an exciting show. Again, if you'd like to call in later on in the show, it's 213-943-3773. 213-943-3773. So, yeah, we're going to try to have it's a good time tonight. We've got a lot of great topics we're going to address. Triple G, of course, and Canelo. Controversial decision at that fight in Las Vegas a couple of weeks ago. We're going to talk about Oscar Valdez and his rise to the in the featherweight division. We're going to also touch on Chocolatito. And is this the beginning of the end for Chocolatito? He was been on the forefront of the smaller weight classes for the last few years. So we're looking to, I don't know what's going to happen with him coming up in the future. He lost again to Sor Rungvisai a few weeks ago. So pretty debilitating loss for him. So we'll look for, I'll try to talk to Norm Frauenheim to see what his thoughts are on the return or the end of Chocolatito. So other than, we should have a good show. Again, 213-943-3773. Is the number to call. We're also going to touch on Daniel Jacobs. Over the weekend, he signed with HBO, Matchroom Boxing USA. And, of course, that is run by Eddie Hearn, who's the biggest matchmaker over in the UK. So, look, I wonder if Karen Mulvaney, if he'll have any thoughts on that signing, since he's the voice of HBO, as I like to call him. So, looking forward to it. If you guys got any other topics you want to talk about during the second half of the show, I'll be we're open to all, any and everybody. So feel free to call in. Again, the phone number is 213-943-3773. And as I stated in the opening, the big topic, of course, was the controversial decision or scorecard, if you will, of Adelaide Byrd out in Las Vegas. And she had a 118-110 for Canelo. And even if you had people who thought Canelo might have won, that scorecard seemed to be a little off for a lot of people. So I don't know what the situation is going to be with Adelaide Byrd and in the near future, whatever the Nevada State Athletic Commission is going to do with her, or they'll decide to let her take some time off. Not sure. So we'll discuss that too. Just waiting to get the champ to call in. Hasim Rahman, of course, he's out of Baltimore, Maryland. And of course, he brought a lot of, I guess you would say, he brought a lot of hoopla, if you will, to the city of Baltimore when in his tremendous KO victory off of Lennox Lewis in April 2001. So we might touch on that for a few minutes. I know he has a lot of things that he has to do this evening, so he's only going to be on for a few minutes, but he was gracious enough to say he would give us a call. And, of course, if you listen to my show before, you've known that I've periodically had Karen Mulvaney call in to give his thoughts or reflections or whatever fight he's been to recently, along with Norm Frauenheim out in Arizona. So, and Norm, by the way, is one of those guys, you know, where you go to the fight and he's one of those front row guys. So I'm interested to see what he says about the big fights of the last few weeks, the last couple of months, rather, and have his reflection on it. So, again, the phone number is 213-943-3773. That's 213-943-3773. I don't know if anybody's going to, maybe in the second hour, a lot, of course, the big thing going on in the sports world right now is the whole flag situation and the protesting of the national anthem at various sporting events. And very polarizing subject. You might have half go one way, half go another for their particular reasons. Of course, the race issue has really taken hold in the sports world as of the last few months. And even in the NBA, you had some players stepping up and saying that they weren't going to, whether it be support the president or even go visit the president or have anything to do with the president. So I don't know as far as that's concerned. So if you got any interesting viewpoints on that, you know, let me know. And, you know, we'll dive into that subject as well. Also, you guys, if you want to dive into your favorite team as far as the NBA training camps beginning, playoff baseball coming up in the next couple of weeks, whatever you guys want to talk to, the second hour will be open. So, again, call in 213-943-3773. I don't know how to say this, but it's like in a boxing world where you have a situation where the judges have been under scrutiny for so long. And even during this great year of boxing, we've had some iffy decisions made, even in victories where a boxer has won. I've been questioning a lot of the scorecards, and that's something that's always been a part of boxing. I guess it always will be. And I don't know if that's going to be a point of emphasis. Again, it seems to always be said that there's something that would be done about it, but it always seems to have controversy. But in this particular fight where you have fighters of that magnitude who train like that, and, you know, it's for all the marbles, if you will, you know, the best two middleweights in the world. And I don't know. I mean, like I said, if you caught my blog post, I thought Gennady Golovkin won the fight. I had a 116-112, or equivalent to 8 rounds to 4. Some may have a 7-5, or some may even have it a draw. I wouldn't go that far. But yeah, definitely had him winning the fight. But to have a fighter that went 118 to 110. It kind of makes you wonder what's going on. Of course, Golden Boy is the one of the bigger promotional companies out there, maybe the most influential in the sport. Yeah, along with Top Rank, of course, the Godfather himself, Bob Arum. You know, he's been around for a long time, but you know, you just don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Not to say that there is any kind of backdoor dealing going on, anything like that, but it makes you wonder with a scorecard, you know, that drastic in one way that shouldn't have been, you know. So, yeah, I'm still waiting for the champ to call in. I sent him a message a few minutes ago, so hopefully he calls in. If not, we have some other guests that'll be calling up in the next 5 or 10 minutes. So hopefully I can get him on. If not, then, you know, he'll, you know, he may call in later. So I know he was on his way out of Baltimore, leaving town. So in the meantime, if you guys have anything you want to chat about, 213-943-3773. That's 213-943-3773. And, getting back to the whole national anthem thing before our guests call in, I happened to catch a few different high-profile media members give their opinion on the situation. In particular, Shannon Sharp of Fox Sports, And he really dig deep into, I think, is the psyche of a lot of people. And I think he touched on the feelings of a lot of people and what they're really thinking about this whole thing. And the all of a sudden situation where you have the owners of the NFL all of a sudden wanted to take a knee or, you know, pledge their allegiance sort of with the players after the president had basically called the players son of a bitches. So, and he had stated, is it all is it about the money or what is it? So, you know, we're going to continue to, in the next few weeks, you're probably going to have more and more people coming out and, you know, whether it be for them or whether it be against them. So I'm not sure. Last night I was watching Arizona Cardinals and Dallas Cowboys, and I noticed Jerry Jones came out there, and he took a knee with the players. And, you know, some – I know you understand that, you know, 32 teams in the shield of the NFL, and they're trying to protect billions of dollars. But the question that I will pose to – you all out there is, will that open the floodgates for any kind of discussion on having Colin Kaepernick come back to the NFL? Because now that you have the owners who are more or less showing their approval or support of the players and their right for the freedom of expression or freedom of speech, will that allow the dialogue to begin for Colin Kaepernick, maybe landing a job somewhere or even a backup role with a team? Because let's be honest, it's quite obvious. It's 32 teams out there, and he's better than half the quarterbacks, and even after a bad year. So we'll see what's going on with that. In the meantime, 213-943-3773. It's 213-943-3773. I don't know if the chant might have set me up tonight. I'm not sure, but we're gonna continue with the show. So I don't know. Of course, Karen Mulvaney, he will be calling in shortly as well. And if you ever listen to HBO Sports or Boxing, Karen Mulvaney is always in the interview, if you will, when the big fights come about, or different documentaries or different short stories on any of the fighters. He's the main voice of HBO, and he's a really interesting man. And it's an interesting story. A couple of years ago, in my first fight I ever covered for my blog, Gennady Golovkin versus Willie Monroe out in Los Angeles. And I'm walking around starstruck. I'm walking around. This is the home of the, or former home of the Lakers. And, you know, you're walking around, you're getting the feel of the place. You know, you're seeing all the people, the crowd. So I'm like, okay, this is my first time, you know, covering this boxing event for my blog. So I'm pretty psyched. And the first time in L.A. So I'm sitting out there and I walk around and I see the HBO truck. And I'm like, oh, man, that's cool. So I'm like a fan at this point, kid in the candy store. So I'm like, I might probably take a picture. The next thing I see Karen walking out. So I walk up to him, and I began a conversation with him, and it's like he's such a great guy. You know, you meet some of these people, and you wonder, you know, how will they be once you, you know, you get to meet them or, you know, you have any kind of expectation. And it was cool, man. He even took a selfie with me, and he gave me his information. Said if I ever wanted to come on the show, if he ever wanted to come on the show, just give him a call. So that was pretty cool. So yeah. Good afternoon, caller. Welcome to Chilling with Cheese.
How are you? It's Kieran.
Hello, caller.
Yeah, hi, it's
Kieran
Mulvaney.
How are you, man?
I'm pretty good.
Doing,
how are you
friend?
Doing, my friend? Good, good. Yourself?
Oh, man, it's good to hear your voice. All right. I was just telling the people out there the first time I met you and how gracious you were.
I was climbing down from the HBO truck, as I recall.
Yes, yes. And I said, you know, every now and then you stop through and, you know, just lend your support, and I really appreciate it. So how you been doing?
Not at all. All right. I'm very happy. I'm back home after pretty much 3 weeks on the road. We had, you know, back-to-back-to-back fights, you know, a couple out your way, obviously, at Stop Up in the Forum, and then a reasonably big fight in Las Vegas in between. So I'm just glad to be home for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, man, and I wanted to have you on specifically to talk about the whole Triple G Canelo experience. Now, leading up to that fight, what was it like as far as the hoopla and, you know, just the overall feeling of the experience of that fight?
I enjoyed it. It felt like a really, really good big fight atmosphere. You know, oftentimes when it's like a really super big fight, if it's like a Floyd fight or a Manny Pacquiao fight, a lot of the time, you know, it's just because there are just massive numbers of people who are just fans of Floyd or fans of Manny, and not necessarily boxing fans. What felt different to me, it's hard to quantify, but it felt different to me, was that obviously there were Canelo fans and obviously there were Golovkin fans, but there were boxing fans. This was a fight fans fight. You know, there were people, we had like a media dinner at one of the restaurants in the MGM, and you know, there were different fighters and various folks there, and there were fans just outside the door trying to catch a glimpse of, you know, Bernard Hopkins or Oscar De La Hoya or people like that. Like, it was a real, the people who were there for a fight, and it really, rather than an event or a circus, this, and that really came across. I thought the excitement was really palpable. There was a huge, huge crowd at the weigh-in, lots of media. Mm-hmm. It really felt good. But it was interesting, on fight night, it was really quiet until both guys hit the ring, and then once the fight started, then it just took off.
Oh man, it was quite the experience watching it as well. And obviously, there were two builders, two best middleweights in the world. And mm-hmm. of course, by now everybody knows about the controversial scorecard on the, especially on the hand of Adelaide Byrd. What was your feeling? Scores were being read at that time. Did you get a sense that, hey, something is going on when that first scorecard was read?
It was different. I couldn't see anybody winning by that kind of a score. I scored the fight 114-114. I scored it a draw.
Okay.
And I had Gennady winning and actually doing a number on Canelo through nine rounds. And then I thought, you know, that Canelo won the last three rounds, gutted it out and pulled them off. But I turned to my podcast partner, Eric Raskin, next to me. I said, I have it for Gennady, and so I think, therefore, that Canelo will get it. You know, I think the assumption being that in Las Vegas, Canelo would get an extra round or two because, you know, we've seen before that he's gotten, you know, the benefit of the doubt a lot. And a lot of us were actually a little bit focused on Dave Moretti, who has been quite generous to Canelo before. And we were joking during the, like, you know, like one of the undercard fights, somebody said to me, there is, have you scored all these rounds for Canelo yet? And I go, no, but Dave Moretti has. But I was very surprised that actually he was the one guy who scored it for Gennady Golovkin. I think I have no problem with a 115-113 scorecard for either guy, actually. If you had it as wide as 116-112 for Golovkin, I think that would be fine. I just cannot comprehend what Adelaide was looking at. I just truly cannot. I can't even put myself in her head and figure out, you know, like in the fifth round, Gennady practically took Canelo's head off. I mean, it spun around like Linda Blair from The Exorcist after he landed a big right hand. And to Canelo's credit, he took it, but she gave Canelo that round, you know? So I don't know. And you know, and look, I had the same scorecard, or the same score, Don Trella, but he gave Canelo round seven, which was, I thought, was one of Gennady's most dominant rounds.
Yeah.
And so that was a mistake, I think. I think a draw is fair. I just don't know that it was arrived at in the right way.
Yeah, that's amazing. Have you heard any word on what the situation will be with Adelaide Byrd at this point, what the Nevada State Athletic Commission will do with her?
I actually wrote to Bob Bennett, the executive director of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, asking him for that information in the hope that, you know, maybe that's something we could use on the HBO broadcast of the replay. He did not reply to me. So I do not know. I've only heard, I mean, that evening, in the immediate aftermath, he said to some reporters that he thought he would take Adelaide out of the firing line a little bit for a while, take her out of the big events for a while. Then I had heard, I didn't see it myself, but I heard secondhand that he had said that he might, you know, take her, you know, off fights the rest of 2017. But I do not know. Like I said, I asked him directly and he didn't respond.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. And I know everybody's talking about a potential rematch. The only problem that I see in that is that, you know, Gennady's about to be 36 years old. And, of course, we know even, you know, 7-8 months in boxing, especially at that age. And Gennady's one of these guys who's fought three times a year for the last few years. And I'm just wondering, at this time, you know, his peak performance level, the door is closing. So do you think it'll be an in-between fight for Gennady, or do you think that they will just wait out for May for a potential rematch? Or
I think that's going to be up to some extent to Canelo. I suspect that his team is going to put as a condition of a rematch that there not be an interim fight. Gennady wanted to have a fight in Kazakhstan this last summer, and had hoped to have one after Canelo beat Chavez. But the Golden Boy team is quite adamant that if you want the fight to go ahead in September, you cannot have that Kazakhstan fight. And my guess is that what Golovkin would probably quite like to do is turn around and fight Billy Joe Saunders and add his belt to his collection, and then go back and face Canelo. But I suspect strongly that they'll agree to a rematch and Gennady not be allowed to have an interim fight. And I think you're quite right. I think that impacts Gennady perhaps a bit negatively, because he's used to fighting on that, like exactly as he said, that three or sometimes even four fight a year schedule. And you're also exactly right to talk, you know, this possibly aging 35-year-old guy dug deep and produced the last great performance that he had in him and perhaps got robbed of a victory. Will he be able to do the same again in May? Exactly like you said, you know, seven months, 8 months when you're that old, it can make a big difference. So, you know, has Gennady had his best shot at winning? I don't know.
Yeah, that'll be the question, I guess, for the next month or so. Before I let you go, I want to touch on a new signing, if you will, for HBO, which is another of the top middleweights in the world, and Daniel Jacobs. What do you think of that signing with Matchroom USA with Eddie Hearn?
So we're really excited about that for a whole bunch of reasons. A, it means we now have the top three middleweights in the world, because I don't think anybody
That's
would
right.
dispute that Daniel's been the best middleweight after Canelo and Gennady. And it's just very, it's a very interesting deal. Look, Eddie Hearn's been doing a lot of great stuff in the UK with Matchroom. It's really where boxing is really at its best right now. And he has talked about wanting to set up a Matchroom USA. And he's picked a pretty big way to make his first splash with Matchroom USA, to pick Daniel Jacobs, and for HBO to sign him. And we're pretty excited. We're going to be doing, a fair bit of work with Matchroom. I think we've got some of his fights on a couple of our cards coming up. We're going to do a live feed from Belfast, one of his fights on October 21st. We will have a light heavyweight fight from Monaco that he is promoting, a card that he is promoting featuring Dmitry Bivol. That's going to be November 4th. And then later in November at another time, yet to be officially announced. We will have that card, the Matchroom USA card with Daniel. So I think it's pretty exciting. It's great to have a new player, I think, in the business. It's good to shake it up, isn't it? You know, and have a new name and another player, and especially a guy who's done, you know, what he's done over there. And look, Daniel's not only a great fighter, but a heck of a nice guy. And I think we enjoyed having him back on, you know, when he fought Gennady. And I think he liked being back on HBO. He liked the 24/7 treatment, and, you know, and I like to think he missed us. So, and it's good news for Danny, because, you know, he wants a rematch with Gennady, and if he can, or a shot at Canelo, and the way to do that is to come to HBO. So, good for him.
Yeah, that's great. And you touched on one really good point, and you could say it for all those middleweight guys, whether it's Gennady or Canelo and now Daniel Jacobs, they are great ambassadors for the sport. I mean, you couldn't pick three better guys if you dropped them on a, you know, from Mars. And I just think he's a great addition as well to HBO. Before you go, of course, you know, we've all been Chocolatito fans the last 4 or 5 years. He's really given us some great moments. What do you think will be his ultimate decision now that he's lost, you know, potentially maybe his last fight? What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know. It looks like, didn't it? It looked like a guy who was done, didn't it? And doesn't it show... Man, boxing, doesn't it just show the toll that it takes, right? I mean, 6 months ago, this guy was the number one fighter pound for pound in the world. And now he looks like he's done, doesn't he? And look, I don't pretend to know him very well. I've interviewed him a bunch. But it's always difficult to read into how people, you know, look or their body language. But after that fight, his body language to me, it didn't look like somebody who was upset that they'd lost the fight or whatever. He just looked profoundly sad to me. He was sitting there with his, you know, sort of his arms around his knees, just looking like it's just done. And I think part of the problem is that, like, he's had a lot of fights and they've been very exciting fights. He can't, even by the standards of 115-pound fighters, who are by definition pretty small people. He's really small,
right.
But he can't make 112, and I think he's struggling to make 115. And you know, he's been bowling people over at 105, 108, 112, and now just those few pounds have made a difference. And he's a bit older. And man, what a hellacious knockout! Hey, I mean, what a shocking stoppage, and what a terrific win for Sorungasai, but. Yeah, exactly. Like you said, those of us who've enjoyed Chocolatito, it was a bit of a sad moment, wasn't it?
Oh, man. And you bring up another good point. You go back to the last few years, and I mean, he has really had some tough opponents. I mean, he out in L.A. a few years ago against Edgar Sosa, he looked fantastic. But since then, he had Brian Valoria, and then he had Rungvisai twice, and it's like, you know, these guys are some tough guys, even though at the small weight. And I think, as you stated, after the fight, he just looked like he was just tired, Karen.
Yeah. Yeah, tired is right. I think that's a really good word. That's exactly it. He looked weary and done, and, you know, and his girlfriend was ringside, and I think his mom was, and they were just, like, inconsolable. It just felt like, boy, how quickly it can end in boxing. My goodness.
Yeah. Well, look, man, I appreciate you coming on. You want to tell everybody what you got coming up in the next month or so? Or
going to be at home for a couple of weeks working on some non-boxing writing, and then traveling again, going to Turning Stone Casino. We have a Boxing After Dark coming from Turning Stone on October 21st featuring Jisreel Corrales. A fight coming from Northern Ireland, and then looks like we've got a packed November. We have Monaco November 4th, we have Sergey Kovalev November 25th, and at some stage in November we'll also have Daniel Jacobs. So I am going to enjoy being here in Vermont, where I live, enjoying the fall weather, watching the leaves turn, and enjoying some peace and quiet until the whole boxing roadshow gets going again.
Man, well, I appreciate it. And like I tell everybody, you are one of the nicest guys you ever want to meet. And you always are so gracious. Even when I see you at the fight, you always come up and give me a handshake. So I don't want to wear out my welcome too much because I might want you on in a few months for another 10 to 15 minutes.
You bet. I really appreciate you asking me, and it's always a pleasure, man. And I love what you're doing, and you know, I love your energy and everything you're bringing to this. So if there's anything I can do to help you out, you know it. You know I'm there for you.
I appreciate it, Karen. Take it easy, man.
You too. Bye bye now.
Yeah, it's Karen Mulvaney from HBO, and he really takes you inside the ropes, if you will, and he brought up some interesting thoughts about the Canelo Triple G card, I mean fight, if you will, and yeah, I'm really interested to see what they're going to do about that. Now you got Daniel Jacobs in the mix, and Daniel Jacobs, of course, and I hear there are rumors he may be fighting David Lemieux, which would be a hell of a fight. But yeah, as far as Triple G, man, you got this guy who's going to be 36 years old, and of course the two biggest fight days in the year in Las Vegas are you know, Cinco de Mayo weekend and Mexican Independence weekend, and you know, 7-8 months, and then you got 3 months of training, and I just don't know if this guy can turn it up like that again. I mean, he's had some really tough opponents the last few years, going back to David Lemieux, where he just, you know, I mean, David Lemieux has bounced back tremendously, but even in that fight, Golovkin just took him to the woodshed. But as I said before, Lemieux has come back, and he's looked tremendous. And, you know, he said it was a learning lesson against Triple G. So if that fight transpires with him and Daniel Jacobs, and maybe the winner of that fight moving up to fight, whether it be Canelo or Triple G or, you know, I just don't know. I mean, that's one of the, you know, one of the more, one of the situations that I'm willing to see, waiting to see what's going to transpire with that. But in the meantime, in a couple minutes, we'll have Norm Fraunheim from 15rounds.com calling in from out in Arizona. I'm looking forward to his perspective on the, events that have taken place over the last couple of months as well. I haven't talked to Norm in a while, but as I stated earlier in the show, he and Karen are kind of the two go-to guys when I want or need some information or want to get my show back on the road. They've always been willing to come on and bring forth a sense of credibility to the show that a lot of shows just don't have. A lot of shows you can call in or you can listen to, and they'll have guys, you know, off the beaten path or a guy from around the corner come on the show. But I try to have some established guys in the business who know exactly what they're talking about. And, you know, that's what I aim to bring to you guys, you know, for the near future. And like I said, so, yeah, we'll see what's going on with that, but hey, Norm, how are you?
Hey, Robert, how are you?
Hey, good to hear your voice, man. How you been doing?
I've been busy. I've been all over the place, to tell you the truth. It's been from Mayweather McGregor to Golovkin Canelo to Valdez Cervania. So I'm finally... I'm just kind of coming down from the crazy several weeks. And in fact, I was in Vegas before that because Michael Carvajal went into the Nevada Hall of Fame, so I covered that as well.
Yes. Yeah, I heard about it. And I just had, before you called in, I had Karen Mulvaney from HBO, and he was saying the same thing, how I guess both of you guys have been, you know, on a world tour, if you will.
Yeah,
take us back to that, and before you get into it, take us back to that whole Mayweather McGregor fiasco. What was that like?
you know, I'm not sure what to make of it yet. I wasn't sure that I should be there at all, but the ring asked me to cover it, so I did. I have to say it wound up being more entertaining than I figured. There could be some reasons for that. You know, Floyd said that he didn't spar for at least a month beforehand. It might have been more than that because of his hands. That begs the question is why he wanted the 8-ounce gloves instead of the 10-ounce. But if he didn't spar at all, then, you know, that explains some of his tentativeness early. And then in the end, I thought, you know, I mean, McGregor was in there for, what was it, 10 rounds. I mean, he was standing in the end, and that showed me something. So that part surprised me. So all in all, I kind of enjoyed it. And then, of course, it was the crazy post-fight news conference when McGregor showed up with a fifth of his own Irish whiskey and was interrupting the questions and saying, just a minute, Dennis, just a minute. This whiskey, so delicious, Irish whiskey. I swear to you, by the time the news conference was over, he must have downed half that bottle after taking all those right hands from Floyd. Amazing.
Oh, my goodness. Now, Norm, I know you're a big boxing guy, and you're kind of a purist yourself. What did you make of this fight as far as Floyd going for 50-0 and passing Rocky Marciano, being an undefeated fighter? What do you think about that?
It just bothered me. You know, to me, and I put this in at the end of my ring story. I don't know if it's out yet, but the print edition, but. You know, I think I'm an old guy, you know, so bear with me, but I think of Henry Aaron, and I think of Atlanta when he hit what broke Babe Ruth's home run record, you know. And, I mean, he had to hit it off a real major league pitcher, right? It wasn't like they put the ball up on a tee and say, okay, you can break the Babe's record, just hit it off the tee. Essentially, that's what they were letting Floyd do. So that, you know, that bothers me. I don't know how you feel about it.
Oh, I totally agree with you, man, and I said all along that I thought it was just a big money grab, and I guess you're getting $100-200 million, I'm in agreement with you. I just thought it was something that, even if it was an asterisk beside it, I mean, a lot of people disagree
like
with
that.
Me, but I just thought, I mean, yeah,
well,
I just
you know,
didn't
and
get
I mean,
that,
it's a, even that part of it is a money grab because, you know, Floyd has trademarked the 50-0 thing, and I'm sure I haven't seen the T-shirts or caps yet. Maybe they're out there, but I don't know what he's charging them for. But I'm sure that, you know, he'll be selling them, you know. Which, you know, he did that. They allowed him to do it. And in the end, I wish he would have been different about it, and you know, I wish he'd shown up front. He said, "I won't do it this way. You know, I'll fight a real guy." You know, even if it was, I mean, I'm not saying he had to fight Golovkin or any of those guys. You know, fight Broner or somebody, but fight somebody real, because we all knew what was going to happen here, right? I mean,
that was pretty obvious.
Yeah, so I mean that part bothered me, and you know, there's a lot of questions as to why the Nevada Commission sanctioned it as a box. I mean, that's, you know, they got the foot in the door there, but of course it's boxing and it was about money, and everybody knew that that was going to bring some money into the city, so that had to be a factor. And you know, ironically, and this was something that's been long forgotten, but something happened here in Arizona, which kind of set the precedent. You know, if there had been a debate, they could have said, well, Roy Jones was allowed to fight that guy who only had amateur boxing and had about 15 MMA matches, and that was sort of the same thing. So I don't know if you guys recall that.
Right.
So they shouldn't have let that happen either, but it was Roy, so, you know, they said okay.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, we're pretty much in line with that agreement. But getting right to the main part of the matter, Triple G and Canelo. Of course, by now everybody knows about the scoring fiasco. You sitting ringside.
Yeah.
What were you thinking when the scores were being read?
I was stunned. I was completely stunned, and This is one of that, you know, I have friends that I respect, but I just, this is one of these few fights. You always have, you know, this always is going to happen. But, you know, you can argue one way, you can argue another way. But, and it was confirmed to me that last week, just hanging out with some of the guys before the Valdez-Cervania fight. But I just didn't get it. I mean, I had it 116, 112, 8-4. And
so did I, yeah.
And I just, Golovkin, I'm talking about, in my mind, controlled the fight. Now, the argument is he controlled the ring, he controlled the fight. The argument is that Canelo had more power in his hands. Maybe he did, but I'm going to tell you this much. Golovkin never backed off. No matter what Canelo threw, that guy was in his face. Now, right. You know, nobody was knocked off their feet. Maybe Canelo has lost a little bit in his foot speed. I can see all of that. But he didn't back down from any of that. He controlled the fight throughout, and I detected, you know, some middle rounds there that Canelo was really getting frustrated. The big question I have, I know the Adelaide Bird is the one that's outrageous and that's on everybody's mind, and I agree with that. But the card that bothers me is the Trella card, the 114-114 draw.
Yes.
The seventh round, he gave that round to Canelo. The other two judges gave it to Golovkin.
That was incredible.
And I defy
yeah.
anybody else in that arena or who was watching it on TV, that might have been Golovkin's best round. I don't know how he scored that round.
It definitely.
It just doesn't. And if he had scored it the way it should have been scored, then Golovkin walks away with a victory, which is the way it should have ended. But it didn't. So that's, you know. I mean, that's my rant on this thing. But, you know, I talked to Miguel Diaz. I talked to, you know, I mean, Aram, all those guys last week. They all had it 116, 112. And I thought, So I'm, you know, I mean, you know how you question yourself when you score these things and you hear other people and you think, like, well, maybe I was just wrong. But then I heard this last week, and Miguel Diaz goes to me and he says, I was being kind. I said, okay, Miguel. And then, but Miguel Diaz, by the way, is a famous cut man. Mm-hmm. It was Marcos Maidana's first trainer and stuff, been around forever. But,
right.
You know, you talk to those guys, and you know, they all see it. You know, and there is this kind of revisionism, and I don't want, because I don't want to make my Mexican friends mad, but I think the bandwagon started picking up, and, you know, we got to support Canelo on this one, but I swear to you, once this is over, and I foresee a trilogy, and it would not shock me if Canelo wins the next two fights, because I think Gennady's getting older. I think that part is true.
Yes.
So I wouldn't be surprised, and Canelo is smart, and he learns from defeat. He proved that against Mayweather, and I think he'll do it again. He'll improve because of this. But in his heart of hearts, he got a gift here. And I hope he uses it the right way. And I think he will. But I think it's a trilogy, and Canelo will win the next two fights. That's just, you know, thinking long term.
Yeah, and that's it's funny you say that.
You know,
I mentioned
by the way, at the post-fight news conference, I felt terrible for Golovkin. You know, Oscar De La Hoya, his promoter, and Oscar's matchmaker were talking about, well, we agree with everybody about the 118-110 card, and we think, you know, don't dismiss the fight, and, you know, it because it was a great fight. You know, those of us in boxing know that. But this was a chance after, you know, the complaints about Mayweather-McGregor, this was a chance to really win over some fans with what they were advertising. It was a real fight. Which it was a real fight. But for the casual fan, they see the 118-110 argument, and they say, same old, right? Am I wrong about that?
That's right. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. The only question I have with it, Norm, is you're talking about the trilogy, and you had mentioned that Canelo, I'm sorry, Triple G will be 36 years old, and
right.
he's been in some pretty tough fights as
yeah,
of late.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking if he waits till the May 5th Cinco de Mayo weekend, I mean, and
right.
I mentioned this before, 7 or 8 months for a fighter of that age is like equivalent to a year and a half, in my opinion. I just don't know if he can, you know, that peak performance window may be closing at this point. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think there's some truth in that. I mean, you know, he's been great, but he, you know, he dominated for so long, but he took, you know, we saw over the last year, Jacobs especially, you know, that he's not quite the guy he was. But I mean, he's at a weight class, you know, where that happens. So I don't know. I mean, Jacobs. I mean, how would you think? How do you think Jacobs would have done against either of those guys that night? I think he would have done pretty well.
Absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned that, because what do you think about him signing with Matchroom USA and Eddie Hearn now? I think it's a big deal for him. What do you think?
Yeah, I do too. And I mean, I think for Eddie Hearn, it's a pretty big deal because you know, he wants to come into the United States. The larger question is what happens to a lot of these PBC guys. Because they're falling away now. I mean, I'm closer to the Oscar Valdez situation, and Frampton signed with Macklin, and Macklin represents Michael Conlon, who was on that card. So that fight for Aram will be pretty easy to make. But the question is what happens to Morris and Santa Cruz and those guys? Because we don't know at this point.
Yes.
But I mean, I'm pretty sure that you'll see sometime. Aram told me that sometime early next year, you'll see Valdez fight Frampton, and I think that's a pretty good fight.
Well, I'm glad you brought Oscar Valdez up. Of course, he's out your way, Tucson area, by way of Mexico, and I think he's just one of the talented young fighters in the world. But he's in that really ultra talented. Featherweight division. Give me your thoughts on Oscar and his potential money making power as a big time featherweight.
Well, he made $400,000 that night, which is pretty good for him.
Yes.
He's a great you know he's a great kid, Robert. He's a great kid. You know, he's one of those kids. I look at him. And I think, boy, your mama and daddy raised you right. You know, he's very socially conscious.
That's right.
You know, with the dreamers, and you got to respect all of that. But I really do. But he took a lot of that on. Not, I guess he would have anyway, but because he had to know that the Filipino was tougher than anybody had realized, and.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar's a really, really smart guy, and I think he makes Manny Robles, his trainer, nervous as hell because he likes to engage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he proved that against Mariaga, and he didn't have to do it against Mariaga.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the, you know, he wants to entertain that crowd, and he does it, but boy, he took them on a wild ride this time around because I after seven rounds, I had it 4-3 for him, and you know, I was thinking, you know, he gets knocked down again. This thing could turn bad for him. But he pulled it out. Now that said, that's one of the things that makes him, you know, marketable. You know, but how long can you fight like that? You know, I mean, let's say you go in against a guy like Gary Russell, you know, who's got some whack, and you go in there and you run into that power. He'll knock you out. So that's the kind of thing you got to be careful about.
Yes.
So, no, but I really
I think you're right. This may have been a.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a great, great.
No,
kid.
I think you're right.
Really
this might have
kid.
Been a learning experience for him. A
yeah,
learning
no,
experience
I, Manny
for
Robles
him this
complained
last fight.
He complained. Manny didn't complain so much after the Mariaga fight. He just told me. He said, "I don't think he needs." He didn't. He needed to do that, and he. I can remember that fight. That was at the StubHub Center, L.A. And as they came out, you know, for the final round, Oscar looked at him and said, "Let's go, you know, let's go, let's give them a show." And as a paying customer, you gotta love that. But if I'm Manny Robles, I'm going, what are you doing?
Right.
And this time,
oh my goodness,
Manny, I could tell he was annoyed, and he came over and he says, "Well, he's I'm gonna have to talk to him because he's got to listen more in the corner." And I said, "All right, that's good though. You know, Manny Robles is the nicest guy you'd ever want to meet away from, but he gets in their faces, and that's a good thing. You know, he stays on him. So." Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Oscar Valdez is a guy who's good for boxing. So you want to see him be there,
yes,
you know, near the top of the game for as long as possible. So,
yeah, absolutely,
you know, he's wise.
I totally
beyond
agree.
His years,
and
that, mm-hmm,
yes,
of that, so,
yes, indeed. What do you think the potential is for him in a potential matchup with it, whether it be a Leo Santa Cruz or a Mares, and next year, do you think the promotional companies will allow these kind of fights to take
place?
Is that wishful thinking?
Because that's the question at this point. The fight, they have a chance to really turn on the LA market, because you know that Mexican American fan base, they really like fighters in that weight class. So you got Santa Cruz, who lives there. Mares grew up there. Valdez is living there. You could almost have a tournament with those guys. The fight that would
yes,
interest me the most at this point among those three is Mares Valdez, only because it's interesting to watch Mares. You know, he'll push you. You know, he'll take it to the edge. When I say take it to the edge, he'll pull some tricks, you know, that are questionable. You know, are they legal? You know the whole low blow story a few years ago and all that stuff.
Right.
And Oscar's a very disciplined, by the book kind of kid. And for Oscar, mm-hmm, that would be a tough fight because he would have to deal with that. Now, he's smart enough to deal with that. And Mares has been a little bit dismissive of Valdez. I don't know that he would be now, because I think Valdez is, you know, he's got his attention. A lot of it depends on what happens with Frampton, because you're going to see that before you see the others. And Frampton,
I agree.
I would think that Frampton will be re-energized with the new contract. And he's being managed by, you know, Macklin, which means he's got the same, you know, he and Conlon have the same manager, and they're both from Belfast and all of that. It sounds like it would be a Vegas fight. Aram told me that he said, "Well, I don't think that Frampton would want to come to Tucson." And I said, "Well, you wouldn't want to go to Belfast, would you?" He said, "No, we wouldn't do that either." So
right. That's interesting. Hey, Norm, does Oscar Valdez train with Michael Conlon? I know they're top rank, but do they both train together?
They spar.
Wow.
So, yeah, that would be interesting. I've never seen it, but I was talking to Conlon and Oscar, and they train. That Conlon, he's another very entertaining young fighter. I don't know. He showed some real pop, you know, so... I think he's got to learn a little bit of discipline, but he threw a right hand that guy never saw it. It was huge.
Yeah.
It just came from nowhere. So that crowd lit up on that. So, and they drew a pretty good crowd. Tucson's not the biggest town, and the University of Arizona was playing Utah, mm-hmm, at the same time. So, they did all right. They did all right. So it's
that's pretty good.
It's an uptick. You know, I'm hearing now that David, you know, in Arizona, David Benavides is probably, there's talk about David Benavides in a rematch with that Gavril guy in Glendale sometime in November.
Man.
I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but that's what the talk is. So, and I don't know.
Yeah,
he's
a tough guy, man.
Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. I mean, at this point, I don't know.
Now,
if I'm not mistaken,
he was out at Big Bear, right?
No.
He was
training
out in Big Bear with Triple G, right?
He did some sparring with him. Yeah, no question. He did some sparring with him. Now, you know, would they be able to do, you know, let's say he beats Gavril, would he fight Zerto Ramirez after that? I don't know. Because he's not going to be, you know, one of the things that makes him so marketable is he's Mexican-American. He's only 20 years old. He's already 168 pounds, so he's going to be a heavyweight. So, you know, that'll be, I just hope they don't rush him too much, you know. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little young, but
yeah. Before
that makes me nervous. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I read your article a few weeks ago on Chocolatito. And what do you think? Do you think this is the end for him? He's had some tough fights, and of course, he just lost to Sorungvazai. What do you think? What do you think is up with him now?
Well, I was really sad to see that happen. I wasn't exactly surprised, but I was really sad to see him get. You know, you could sort of see it in his face. Number one, that weight class, there's a reason for weight classes, Robert, and he might be the best example of it. You know, he just can't bring that power up with him, but I think it might be even more than that. I think when his trainer died, it just kind of took everything out of him. I mean, even his body language. You know, I watched the weigh-in on the internet, and I saw him go to the ring, and I saw bits and pieces of the news guy. His heart just wasn't in it. I just think it kind of killed it in him. And that's so sad, really. To me, it's sad. It's amazing. I've covered these little guys, you know. I was at the height of those little guys. And it's amazing to me.
Yes.
Now, Michael Carvajal is almost 50 years old. And he Roman Gonzalez didn't even get half of what Michael Carvajal earned in one fight back in 1994, however long ago that was. That's how long it's gone on. That's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Man, oh man.
You know, I just for
yeah,
some
that's
reason,
incredible.
They haven't been able to market them. You know, it just hasn't happened. Yeah, I guess you need a good. It's a good example.
Wow.
You need a good business partner. And he and Humberto Gonzalez,
yes.
You know, they hated each other at the time, but now they love each other because they made a lot of money for each other. So I made a lot, gained a lot of money. So anyway.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, before you go, man, do you want to let everybody know what you got going on? I know you got some fights coming up.
Yeah, I'm staying busy. I'm working on a potential book proposal. We'll see how that works out. I don't want to say too much more about
it. Oh, wow.
And there's a chance that that'll happen. I'm getting interested in the heavyweights. Now, especially with Wilder and Ortiz, I don't know what to make of that fight because it just depends on which Ortiz shows up, you know, because I think that's a dangerous fight for Deontay. And then, you know, because I would love to see Deontay Wilder fight Joshua, but
Joshua.
You got to get past this guy. He's got to get past Ortiz. Ortiz, you know, if Ortiz is on, he can give you a world of trouble. So and then other than
he's a pretty tough guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, you know, my Seminoles are struggling, so I've kind of lost interest. Man, first it was Alabama, then it was Irma. Man, I don't know if they're ever going to come back.
Oh man,
that's
the truth, man. You're right about that.
Yeah, I thought they had a chance against Alabama, and it looked like they did in the first half, and then they lost their quarterback, and I don't know where they go now. So, but anyway,
Right.
That's kind of where I'm at.
Well, man.
So how about yourself?
Oh yeah.
How about the Orioles?
I'm hanging in there, man. I'm. Oh well, I don't want to talk about the Orioles right now, Norm. they disappointed me this year, man. I'm so disgusted, but hopefully we'll bounce back next year.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
All right. Well, so when are you going to be out?
Well,
back
man,
in Vegas?
As usual. Mm-hmm. I'm going
to
try
to
be out there for maybe in November. I'm going to try to make it out there. So,
all right.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I'll look for you.
Oh yeah.
Let me know if you're going to be there. And
absolutely.
Always look forward. Enjoy the conversation.
I really appreciate it.
Sure, man.
Absolutely, man. Once again, man, I appreciate you coming on the show. You always bring some great insight, and I really, really appreciate you coming on once again.
Well, you do a good job with it, so thank you, and I look forward to seeing you, Robert. Take care.
All right, take it easy.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, that was great. Always great to hear from Norm. And, of course, as I say, he brings great insight into, I call them the A-class guys. You know, as I stated before, those guys that sit right at ringside where they might have the sweat or blood fall on them. So, yeah, he's a great guy. But, yeah, I don't think we're going to get the champ here tonight. So maybe he'll call in the next show. I'm having another show this coming Thursday. So hopefully he will, call in. If not, I'm going to try to have his son, Hasim Rahman Jr., who's a great young guy, and I watched him fight his first fight at MGM National Harbor just outside of Washington, D.C. And he made quick work of his opponent. And when I say quick, I mean quick. It was like 40 seconds. So I'm looking forward to having him on the show, and hopefully we'll have some other, interesting guests to come on Thursday. So, yeah, I'll just check my Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and I always give you guys the updates of what's going on. But in the meantime, man, it's been real. I had a really good time with Karen Mulvaney from HBO Sports and Norm Fraunheim from 15rounds.com, two of the great guys in the sport of boxing. It was always great to have them on. So, yeah, we're going to keep the train rolling on our next show. So, just keep me in mind. And in this crazy world we live in, let's try to all stick together. And we're going to keep the train moving. So, until my next episode, I'm chilling with Cheese and I'm out.